This is take two of Robert Thompson in Pendleton, South Carolina, February the 9th, 1990. Mr. Thompson, we were talking about schools and the types of schools your father would have gone to. Do you remember the names of any of his teachers?
Well, there's one teacher I remember in particular that was his teacher, mm-hmm. and that was Miss Mamie J. Crawford. And the reason I remember her because she taught me also.
Oh, so you both had her?
We both had her. She taught school and in Pendleton here for 51 years.
My goodness, what did she teach? What grades? What age?
Taught fourth and fifth grades. And she taught practically everyone in this area.
Mm. Were there any other school teachers that you can remember that he
yes,
might have had?
Ms. Rena J. Clark, whose grandson lives next door to me. That's our next door neighbor.
Oh, my.
Miss Rena Clark was the first high school principal in this town for the black school. She's the first principal of Anderson County Training School. She also taught my father.
And you were a graduate of Anderson County Training School,
that is
right?
Correct.
You showed me a picture
mm-hmm.
of that. Where did the teachers live? Did they live...
Teachers at that time had to live in the town where they taught.
Mm-hmm.
And there were homes that traditionally boarded teachers as well as students.
Hmm.
And that was still true when I was going to school. All the teachers had to live here in town.
You couldn't have a teacher that lived elsewhere then?
No,
Okay.
And if a teacher married during the time that they were teaching, they were not married when they got the job teaching. Hmm. They married while they were teaching, then they were terminated.
Oh, I see. Their jobs ended if they were married as a
school teacher.
That's
right. If they married now, there were teachers here who were married, older, much older teachers
mm-hmm.
like Ms.
Mm-hmm.
Crawford and Ms. Clark.
Mm-hmm.
But the young teachers coming to town, if they married, that was the end of their job. There was some kind of unwritten law that they mm-hmm. had that if you were single, you had to remain single as long as you taught in this district.
Do you know what kind of training they had? Did they go to teachers' colleges or colleges?
Oh, yes. Most of them were college graduates.
Mm-hmm. Did your, because we know your parents did attend school because you just told me that your father had the same teacher that you had. How far in school did he go, your dad?
My father, 2 years college.
He had 2 years of college.
Mm-hmm.
What college was that?
South Carolina State.
And that's where you later
that's
went?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And graduated from?
Oh, yeah.
But your father didn't graduate, he had 2 years.
No, he did not graduate. He had 2 years. The war interrupted his education, and he didn't go back to school after he came back from France.
What about your mother? Did she have any schooling?
My mother only went to the seventh grade,
mm-hmm.
but you would never know it. She was a self-educated person. By talking with her, by her writing, and by the way she carried herself, you would never have thought that she was not a college person. Of course, now she was PTA president
mm-hmm.
for 22 years.
Oh, my.
And she was very closely affiliated with the schools. She worked very closely with the schools.
She probably could read and write very well
and
all that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she could.
How was their schooling different from yours that you know of? Did they have different hours or different classrooms or buildings? Or
other than the seasonal school year,
mm-hmm.
It was somewhat the same. The education was the basic type of education,
mm-hmm.
you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, and geography were the real meat of your education back then.
Now, when he went to school, you said you went to, now you didn't go to a school with just one classroom or anything like that.
Oh, no.
No, you went direct. But did he have
He went to a one classroom school during his early years, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He went to a one classroom school out in Oak Grove.
That's what you mentioned, Oak Grove, before that's where mm-hmm. he went to school. What about your grandparents? Do you know anything about their schooling at all?
No, I don't.
Mm-hmm. Or any other older relatives? Do you know anything about what kinds of schools they attended or if they had any education? Do you know
yes.
how much education your grandparents had?
I don't know, but
mm-hmm.
they could read, and write.
Okay, good.
And very good in math. And both of my grandparents.
Mm.
And apparently they must have had some schooling because they had very legible handwriting.
Mm.
And they could both read very well. So the two that I remember.
Mm. And how about, of course, your schooling would be later because you're a lot much younger, but just tell me how many years you attended school. You're a college graduate. You graduated from South Carolina State.
Yeah, back when I was going to high school only went to the 11th grade. We didn't have a 12th grade. You graduated from high school at the 11th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, I graduated from the 11th grade when I was 16.
Oh, my.
Went to college and, finished college when I was 20. I degree when I was 20.
So you were young when you finished.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was your degree?
It was in industrial education. My major was industrial education.
Mm-hmm.
A BS degree in industrial education.
And your brothers and sisters? First of all, how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have two brothers and one sister.
Did they have schooling as well?
Yeah.
Did they all go through college?
Oh, sure. Schooling was a must in our family. You didn't even think about it. You were going to school.
Your parents really made sure you
went.
That's right. I've been hearing the name Rosenwald a lot. I did from a man in Seneca. And you mentioned him earlier when you were talking about schools. Could you tell me something about that history or that background of Mr. Rosenwald?
Rosenwald was a very rich person. I think he lived in New York. That funded black schools. It was the first funding other than local funding that black schools had in the South, especially this part of the South. And he gave financial support to schools all over this area, and they were called Rosenwald Schools.
And he was white.
That's right.
I understand, and Jewish,
mm-hmm.
I take it.
That's correct.
How did he get interested in this part of the country?
I don't know. I've read about it, but I don't really remember how he became interested.
Mm-hmm.
But you found people who would make donations to such causes as that during that time. For instance, the Faith Cabin Library, those log cabins were built all over this part of the state at black schools. And the person who started that was a white person.
Oh, who was that?
I don't remember the man's name, but he secured books and shipped those books in to supply those libraries as long as the citizens would build a library, and they all had to be log cabins there.
Okay.
And the citizens of the community built the log cabins, and there were several built around in this area.
You showed me a picture of one of them.
Mm-hmm. That log cabin is still standing. It's over there on, it belongs to the Pelham Community Club, who sponsors the Pelham Community Center now on the site of the old Anderson County Training School.
And where is it standing then?
Right. That's up on east, on West Queen Street.
West Queen. And mm-hmm. It's still there from where
you see
it.
Still there, yes.
Oh, good. And you have a picture. I'll tell Miss Reed about that. Who was the first person in your family to attend college that you know of?
I really don't know. I'm not sure because several of my father's brothers and sisters attended college.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, who was the first one, I really don't know.
But you said your father didn't go to college, but...
He went to college, but he didn't finish.
That's right. He's the one that only went the 2 years and was in the Army. But some of his brothers and sisters did finish.
Oh,
yeah. Is
yes.
that right?
Uh-huh.
And your father was from a large family.
Family of 14.
That's right. I think we talked about that before. And of the 14, do you know how many of them graduated from college?
I am not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how many graduated, but several were teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know that I'm with him back at college, and I'm Leslie, and I don't know some of the others probably did, but I'm not sure.
But quite a few of them did.
Oh, yes.
In your father's family, when he was little, did they have books at home and newspapers and magazines?
Yes, books, newspapers, magazines. Reading was always a big part of family life. You didn't have TV and even radio to distract you. So reading was a entertainment, and it was a learning experience.
And back when your father went to school, do you think they ever talked about Black history or famous Black men and women in when they taught school? They did back then.
Even when I went to school, all the Black people that we talk about in years gone by, we were very much in the forefront when we came to studying about their lives, and those were role models.
Right.
And we were very much into Black history at that time. In fact, the song "Lift Every Voice and Sing," we called that back then the Negro National Anthem.
Oh.
And we sang that instead of singing
"We Shall Overcome." Now.
Mm-hmm.
We still do. And what's the title of that again?
Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Mm. Did you know of when your father went to school, if they ever read to the class the works of Black authors?
Oh, yes.
They did even then?
Mm-hmm. True.
And how were the white schools different from the Black schools, say, in your father's day?
As different as night and day.
Okay, give me some differences.
Well, some of the differences are that they had better heating system, better lighting systems. In fact, when it became dark in the school, even when I was going to school, if it was real cloudy and it got dark, you were just in the dark because there were no lights. All the heat was heated by a big pot-belly stove in every room. All of the furniture was used furniture. When the whites, everything in the Black school was what the white school discarded, books and all. When they finished with it and it got too bad for them to use, they handed it down to the Black schools. And this was the basis behind integration. Not integration was not done so much to remedy a social problem, it was done to remedy a financial problem.
Right.
Because the majority of the money went to the white schools and the Black schools got very little.
You were really getting the leftovers.
That's right, leftovers. We had outdoor bathrooms, nothing really, except what the people in the community got together and done their own.
A lot of the good things you had, I understand, were the things that your own people really worked on and the money you raised, right?
But now one thing we did have, we had excellent teachers.
Well, that's good.
We had excellent teachers. Now, you find a lot of very successful Black people today and in years past who never went to an integrated school. So, in fact, my two oldest kids, who we feel like achieved quite a bit, they never came under the influence of a white teacher until they went through college. In fact, they were in graduate school before they ever encountered any white teachers. And they did quite well. So their education was a very good education.
Do you remember any educational groups or organizations in the community? Not when you were small, but say when your parents were.
Well, back then, they still had PTAs. PTA was the organization of the Black school, because that's where they got all their support, PTA.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only one I know of. Oh, yeah. Had a Phyllis Wheatley Club. I forgot about that.
What is a Phyllis Wheatley Club?
Well, Phyllis Wheatley was a person that grew up in this area. She was from this area. She founded the Phyllis Wheatley Foundation, which is they're the Phyllis Wheatley Center in Greenville that came out of that organization. And it was an organization to help young girls.
That was the Phyllis Wheatley organization that was founded by Jane Hutton, who was a member of this town, the lady who wrote a Negro prayer. With that, when she established a home for girls in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah, I'm not sure the tape's getting that. Speak up. Tell us again about Phyllis Wheatley and Jane Hutton.
Huh?
Tell me again. Sit here or something.
Jane Hutter was from Pendleton, and she grew up here at the sharecropper here in this town. But then when she became a grown lady, she went to Cleveland, Ohio, and established a home for girls called the Phyllis Wheatley Foundation, where the girls who went from the South to the North to work in homes, she provided a place for them to live, mm-hmm. where they didn't have to live in the streets or maybe in some place that was not suitable for girls, and then they found work in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the Phyllis Wheatley Foundation, and she founded this. But it became so large that she couldn't handle it, and she had to have a board of directors, and it became a really big thing. In fact, one of Robert's uncles worked for the Phyllis Wheatley Foundation there. Mm-hmm. But she was a very outstanding woman in this town, black woman. In fact, she was a mulatto woman who was part white and part black, but she grew up here. She wrote a book. There's a book, A Nickel and a Prayer, that's in most of the libraries here, that she wrote about her struggle here in Pendleton and where she lived.
And her name was Jane?
Jane Hunter.
Jane Hunter, again.
The organization.
What kind of organizations did your older relatives belong to when you were, or your father, when your father was young, like fraternal or burial societies or sewing clubs, stuff like that?
There was the church and the school, and there was one fraternal organization that was very strong when my father was young, and it was called the Odd Fellows. It was something similar to the present-day Masons.
Oh.
And they established that group, and they built what is called the Oddfellow Hall. It was built on the same order of Masonic buildings. And their rituals and their mode of operation was very similar to the Masons.
Who were the leaders? Do you know the names of any of the leaders of the Oddfellows?
Oh, I'd have to look it up. I mm-hmm. do have some papers around here from the Oddfellows Association. In fact, I think I remember one when they dissolved and they divided up their holdings among the living members.
Do you know when the Oddfellows was organized?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go back and look that up. But it was a very prominent organization.
And they met in this building that they built.
That's right.
And where was that located again?
That was located on West Queen Street, right across the street from the school.
Oh, okay. And how often did they meet, do you know?
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I was very small when it was active. I just barely can remember Daddy and some of his some of the regalia that they wore, the hats and the shawls and the ribbons.
Mm.
But it was a very colorful organization.
Did the Oddfellows do anything for the community?
Yes, they had community projects mm-hmm. Wherein they helped the speaking contest for young people, and they gave out small scholarships. And the members of the organization now, they took care of the members' families when they came on hard times.
Mm.
That was the major thrust of the movement, was that to help the down and out people in the community.
Do you know if any members of your family voted in the 19th century? That would be before our century.
No, I don't know. I don't think so. I can remember when the first person, black person here in Pendleton voted.
Do you know who that was?
Yeah, one of them was my mother.
Oh, was she? She one of the first people in Pendleton
one
to vote?
One of the first black people in Pendleton to vote. She and
Miss Mamie Morse.
And,
because that was my question, so who was the first
Mr.
family
Alfred
of...
Mr. Gant and Miss Maggie Wheeler, and there was one more, I believe.
Mr.
Bill Richardson, yeah.
These were all people that voted first, that
was the
first,
people who voted, made an attempt to vote first, yeah, in Pelton.
Made an attempt? They weren't allowed to then?
Well, they had some opposition.
They had opposition. They had opposition when they tried to vote, but they finally succeeded in voting.
How long, what happened, and how long did it take them to vote?
They voted the same day, but when they first went up there, they were confronted by one of the leading merchants in this town and turned away.
They were. And what did they have to do to finally get the vote?
Well, one of the other partners in the store, see, the polls were being held in right next door to where the store was.
Was this Hunter's store?
No, this was not Hunter's store.
Okay.
And one of the owners of this store sent word for them to come back. He'd make sure that they were able to vote.
That they were able.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea what year this was?
I don't remember what year that was.
Was it before the 1920s or after?
It was after, much after the 1920s.
Much after the 1920s.
Yeah.
You know, they made
black people in this area. I don't know. They might have voted in some of the northern states, but they sure didn't vote in the south.
But I see. So
they couldn't. They were not allowed to.
So the very first member of your family to vote would be your mother. Then.
That's right.
It would have been in the 40s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you think this was as late as the 40s?
Oh,
sure.
They didn't vote. True, because they made registration so difficult. Mm. You don't know how difficult even conventions could have been
for us. Right. Do you know if any of your ancestors were free before the Civil War? I think we talked about this and you said they were because of some of them being blacksmiths or something.
Blacksmiths were traditionally free men.
Mm-hmm.
And members of my family who were blacksmiths were...
But you want to call it free.
Yeah, free to a certain extent.
Right.
But you want to call it free.
Not belonging to a particular person, but mm-hmm. not really having that much freedom, right? So you do know that they were. Once the war was over, to your knowledge, was there much difference between black people who had been slaves and those who were free persons of color before the war? You just said if you wanted to call it free, so I get the feeling that you didn't think any of them had freedom.
It's like anything else. I don't think there was that much difference. There might have been a small amount of jealousy, but other than that, I don't think it's that much different.
Did you ever hear anything, did your older relatives ever tell you about the way white people treated blacks? Did you ever hear about that?
Oh, yes. It was like most of the other things you hear. It's not recorded in history like it really happened, but even during my childhood and part of my adult life, segregation, strict segregation, was a way of life. You were so many little things that you never think about happened that we had to be aware of every day. And if you veer it from that, then you're in trouble.
I'm sorry.
Certain things like believe it or not. If you were black, you couldn't buy a Coca-Cola. Not in this time.
Why in the world couldn't you buy a Coca-Cola?
Because that was considered a white man's drink. If you wanted something, you could buy a Pepsi or RC or something like that, but not a Coke. And that happened during my lifetime.
My oldest children lifetime, too.
If you were talking to a white woman, you couldn't look her in the eye.
Mm.
You had to turn your head and look down. You had to always yield to a white person if you were walking.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be the one to get out of the way, to let them by. A young person, a white man, a white youth, when he got to the age of, say, around 12, then you had to begin to call him Mr. And all kinds of little things like that that nobody ever thought about. Traveling, you couldn't go. You couldn't use the restroom. You had to go out into the woods, the fields, or somewhere. And then if you were caught out there, then you were fined for indecent exposure. So it was a hassle all the time.
Yeah, always hassle.
You pull up to the filling station, and they would pump the gas. Save you a quart of oil, but you had to put it in yourself.
Mm.
They still find it very difficult to
live in.
So these are a lot of little things that made life very uncomfortable.
Don't you think so? They still find it very difficult to
handle. In a lot of cases, you find that.
What do you mean by put a handle to your name?
They hate arguments.
As soon as you begin a conversation, They tell you, I'm Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so.
Yeah.
Now, what's your name? And you say, I'm Mr. Thompson. And they say, what's your first name?
Oh, I see. And they want to call you.
And then once if you reveal your first name, then that's all you get. From then on, it's your first name. But now if you address them by the first name, then they are offended. Mm. And that happens. It still happens today in some cases.
Did your older relatives ever warn, say, your father about white people?
Oh, yeah. Your parents had to school you and tell you, because when you were young, you wanted to know always why there were things that you couldn't do that other kids could do. See, when kids aren't born with the prejudices, they're taught prejudices. And when we were real young, our white neighbors and all, we would play together up until we got up a certain size. And then once you got up to that size, then that was the end of it. And in coming up, you would learn little things that set you apart. Mm. You were different.
Mm. Do you remember hearing about any lynchings, or do you, more when your father, I guess I'm thinking about?
Well, lynchings came right on up through generation after generation on up until, I guess, in the 50s.
Do you know of any particular lynching back, say, before the 20s that you heard of?
I don't know of any personally.
Mm-hmm.
We'd read about it in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I know the last one that I remember was in Greenville, when the members, the drivers of the Yellow Cab Company,
mm-hmm.
lynched a man in Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the 50s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And John Boat Covington mm-hmm. was the man's attorney, the first time that a white man ever represented a person who was convicted of lynching.
Mm-hmm. When your father was young, do you remember ever hearing him say how black people were treated by the law back in his day?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. They would arrest you and then make up a law to suit whatever they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And say you broke that law, and then you were fined. If you talked back, you were beaten,
mm-hmm.
and it was very harsh treatment by the law.
Mm-hmm.
And it's according to who you were, and what family you came from, how you were treated. Now, my father had a very good reputation, and his family had a very good reputation, so the law was much more lenient. Wasn't as harsh with them as they were with a lot of people.
Especially here in Pendleton, I imagine.
Especially here in Pendleton now. But when we left Pendleton, we were at the mercy of the law just like anybody else.
Right.
But in your hometown, the law had certain families. If you were so, say, Stewart's boy, John's boy, or somebody, you got a little break, a better break.
Mm. How did married couples in your father's day treat each other? Was the was one person the boss, but the father the head of the family?
Usually, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it was the male domination during that time.
Do you ever remember them talking about black women who had relationships with white men or anything like that?
There's one in every town.
Mm-hmm.
There's one lady in every town mm-hmm. that always dressed better than anybody else, always had fine clothes and jewelry, and could go anywhere and do anything, and nobody bothered her. Mm-hmm. And when you found out why, she was the lady that went with the white man.
I see. Mm-hmm. How did your family, how would you all feel about these relationships? Or, well, your father's day, how would they feel about this?
Well, it was a strange thing. Those ladies were talked about in privacy.
Mm-hmm.
But on the surface, they carried a certain amount of respectability. And that was a must, too. There were some things that I know of a man that was shot by a white man because he was dating this black lady who was this man's mistress.
See, that wasn't allowed.
That was not allowed.
Yeah, he could have her as a mistress, but the black man couldn't have anything
right.
to do with her. I see. In a way, the respect was almost because she did came up in the world or did something that came up in the world. That's the wrong word, maybe, but...
Well, it was because of her association with
the
white man. She carried a certain amount of power.
Ah.
See, she could put you in a lot of trouble just by telling something about you or saying that you bothered her or that you, anything.
That kind of thing.
And, you know, you were open game.
Mm. Also, when your father was growing up, do you know of... anything about how black people treated mulattoes? Do they treat them any differently from other blacks?
Yes, there was a division along lines of color within the black race.
Mm.
They could make the derogatory remarks about people with light skin, but the people with light skin dare not call them black.
Mm.
And everybody, all black people are now referred to as black. But during my early childhood, you were in trouble if you called somebody black.
Right.
I guess the word black was a negative term. And everybody looked upon it as being a negative term. And of course the black kids say that, well, at least my family was honest.